The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a timely, downloadable resource designed for Bible classes. It's titled Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections. Called to Vote is written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb. You can find out more and download Called to Vote on every page of our website, issuesetc.org. Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, issuesetc.org.
You only see numbers like this when people are motivated to stand up for what they really believe in. And I really believe Americans are coming together at the end of this election, and not just Democrats, but Republicans and independents.
This is part of the crooked system. It's part of the rigged system that I've been talking about since I entered the race. I understand it. It's a rigged system. They put out phony polls.
Those are the two candidates for president. They're talking about elections, election fraud, the rigged system. Of course, those kind of accusations fly back and forth rather conveniently. Is it true? Can we depend upon the polls? Is the system rigged? Or if it has been in the past, is it still rigged? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll get our weekly update on the November elections here in the first half hour of the program. Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist will be our guests. A little bit later, Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about men and church. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Kurt Hendel will join us when Issues Etc. Reformation Week continues in hour two of the program on this Wednesday afternoon. We continue the theme of Luther's inner circle today. Luther's pastor, Johannes Bugenhagen, he is probably the lesser known of Luther's inner circle and perhaps the one most significant in taking the theology of the Reformation and putting it into practice, actually putting it down on paper for churches to practice in his famous church orders. Quite a preacher as well. All that's coming up in hour two of Issues Etc. Reformation Week. You can join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. The comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us for our weekly update on the November elections, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
Great to be here with you.
Mark, can you give us the latest on the WikiLeaks email scandal involving both Secretary Clinton and, now it appears, Barack Obama?
Well, gosh, there's so many breaking developments. It's just been day after day. It's been released so much of this information. But more recently, stuff has emerged about from John Podesta's hacked email account, that another email with them discussing the implications of the fact that Barack Obama had emailed Hillary Clinton at her illegal email server, and you know, he raises a lot of question about his complicity in that. And then there's now three or four emails that speak about Obama's involvement in her illegal email server, and also suggest that he might not have been telling the truth when he said that he first learned about the email scandal by reading the news. And then there have just been, there was some talk about Podesta's email, about Podesta himself discussing with Nero Tannen, the head of the Center for American Progress, about why is it that the Hillary Clinton people thought that they could get away with this, and that's literally what they said. They said, you know, they suspected that they could just, you know, get away with this, and they weren't thinking about the logical consequences of it. You know, even to John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's conduct with her email is really shocking.
Molly, I'm curious, how would you assess so far? I just noticed this morning the New York Times had the latest on President Obama and his involvement with this, and they even came out and said it looks like he wasn't telling us the truth, despite what his spokesmen are saying today. Has the mainstream press been really slow to this angle?
I don't know if that's the case. It's not that they're slow, and in fact, even the New York Times story that you referenced was on the front page of the newspaper. It's that despite that, and despite that you might get a story here or there, even a front page story, there doesn't seem to be the frenzied type of reporting with this rather serious scandal that you see with other issues that are not so serious. I mean, it's sort of the same way that they covered Donald Trump's son tweeting about Skittles. You know, that also gets on the front page and becomes kind of a frenzied story for that gets picked up by the broadcast media and whatnot. When you look at the amount of time and energy and just fervor on a given story, I don't think that even learning that President Obama was involved and that his involvement was a big reason why Hillary Clinton was able to escape prosecution for what she did, just doesn't seem like the media are terribly interested in it. Now, I could be wrong, and maybe they'll pick up here, but with particularly with her being the presumed president, according to them, I think we should be seeing a little bit more scrutiny and energy behind that story.
Well, you also have to remember here with regard to the mainstream press here that the sort of Watergate mythos is like central to their identity. They see themselves as the guardians of democracy, and it is their job to hold anybody accountable, even the President of the United States, if necessary. And I think that, you know, considering that the only rational explanation I've heard for why Hillary Clinton was not prosecuted for what should be obviously prosecutable crimes here is that bringing a case against Hillary Clinton would quickly make the case revolve around what did Barack Obama know about Hillary Clinton's legal email server and when did he know it. And on top of that, there was an FBI revelations in late September that Obama was actually emailing Hillary Clinton using a pseudonym. You know, so there's a question about whether or not the things that Barack Obama himself were doing were legal too. And I think that these are very legitimate questions, and it is very telling that the media have not pursued this angle aggressively, because, you know, it certainly is something that, you know, should raise a lot of eyebrows about presidential conduct.
One more question on this, and that has to do with just your sense of it, Molly. Is it possible that the press says, look, this is an enormous story. We do want her to be president, and it'll still be there after she's elected for us to work on. What do you think?
I think that's possible. You know, I think a lot of people look at the disparate media coverage of the two candidates and they assume there must be some grand organized conspiracy taking place. But in fact, I think it's not a top-down conspiracy where people get marching orders so much as general team behavior. You support your team, you oppose the other team, and a groupthink that feeds on itself. And also a bit of embarrassment. They can't cover this story very well because one of the biggest things exposed by WikiLeaks was actually media collusion with the Clinton campaign. So if they're going to pay attention to the story, they're going to have to start calling out their colleagues and their friends who, it turns out, had these very friendly relationships with Clinton confidants and who were running stories by the Clinton campaign. They were okaying quotes. Some of this is normal journalistic procedure. You might have an interview on background, and then you ask if you can quote this, that, or the other. Other stuff is much more disturbing, such as when John Harwood, who you remember, you know, the New York Times, CNBC guy, who moderated a Republican debate, the worst one of the cycle, sending out notes to John Podesta talking about how great Hillary Clinton is and how her opponents are also crazy and whatnot. And you see stuff like that in WikiLeaks, too. You don't want to cover that if you're a media professional because you're so invested in telling the story that your profession is not biased. So I think all these things kind of come together to create an environment that is hostile to actually just doing due diligence on these documents.
And we have to be honest here, the media have an established pattern here of going extraordinarily easy on Barack Obama on very big critical issues for him. I mean, you know, we're certainly seeing this with the recent, you know, revelations that Obamacare premiums have jumped up, you know, an average of 22% next year. I mean, Obamacare is breaking in exactly the ways that conservatives said it would break, and people that have opposed the law from the beginning have warned about. And yet, if you look at how the media covered these issues, and you go back, you see that PolitiFact said that, you know, Republican governors who said that Obamacare would cause premiums to jump precipitously were lying. I mean, like, it is absolutely astounding that they have shown Obama the deference they have on major issues. And when you're talking about an issue here with some of this WikiLeaks stuff that goes right to the heart of his character and his presidency, I just have a hard time imagining if they covered for him in such, you know, inexplicable and, you know, grossly fawning ways when it came to substantive policy issues, that, you know, when it comes to protecting the man's personal integrity, they're going to be really reticent to go after him in that way.
Molly, you've written recently about what some believe are an obsession with sex in media coverage. What are you talking about there?
Well, this was an interesting thing that happened on Fox News last night. Megyn Kelly interviewed Newt Gingrich, who's a contributor there, and they were talking about the state of the race. And Newt Gingrich was giving sort of an alternate view of how bad the situation is for Trump. He said that Trump has the enthusiasm, that people don't want to elect Hillary Clinton because she's so corrupt. He said that he was ahead, that Trump was ahead in early voting in Florida and Pennsylvania. I'm not sure entirely what he was talking about because Pennsylvania does not actually have any early voting. But he's giving this like alternate view on the race. And Megyn Kelly wanted to talk about how Donald Trump seemed to be faring poorly in the polls as a result of all of these stories about women who say he made unwanted advances on them. Newt Gingrich said he thought this was not a great thing to focus on, and they kind of got in a spat about it. And he argued that the media should be more interested in, for instance, some of the stuff coming out of WikiLeaks, like Hillary Clinton's speech that she held from the public where she said she dreamed of a borderless Western Hemisphere. And so Megyn Kelly started talking even more about some of the allegations that women had made. And Newt Gingrich said that these were all unsubstantiated allegations. She acknowledged that. But he said, you know, if you really care about women being victimized by men in the White House, then you should also be denouncing the other ticket, since Bill Clinton is a known sexual predator. And so it just got very contentious and whatnot. But one of the things that Newt Gingrich said was, you're fascinated by sex and you don't care about policy. And it was a funny thing to see the media reaction to his statement, because, you know, here he is saying, you're easily distracted by less important things at the expense of substantive policy issues. And everyone in the media seemed to have the same response to this, which is that they thought what he said was outrageous and horrible, and that that was sort of all they wanted to talk about was what he had said about sex, which to me just managed to prove his point that they are easily distracted by things that don't matter. But, you know, it's interesting. People who are fans of Trump saw that interview and thought that Megyn Kelly did very poorly and Newt Gingrich did very well. People who hate Trump thought exactly the opposite. So it's kind of a Rorschach test, and you know, what you took out of it says a lot about what your feelings are about media versus the candidate.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist, along with Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. We will talk about the announcement from the White House just a couple days ago. Premiums for Obamacare are going to rise by double digits.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
Are you looking for Christmas cards that combine beautiful art with a clear Christian confession? Emmanuel Press offers Christ-centered, affordable cards in a variety of designs. You'll find cards with stained glass, illumination, German frescoes, and other unique artwork found only at Emmanuel Press. Visit their website, emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
When you say, I am baptized, you are in fact saying, Jesus died for me.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Now that work of Christ for you is given to you in baptism.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 26th. We're talking about the November elections, getting our weekly update with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of the Federalist. Mark, another bit of news out of the White House this week was that the premiums for Obamacare, for which President Obama fought so hard in the latter part of his term, that those premiums are likely to rise double digits in the next year. What's the takeaway from this story?
Well, you know, it's an average of 22%, I believe, across the board. It's really just sort of astonishing because what you have a situation here where you have the supposed, you know, wonderful, you know, government-supplied comprehensive health insurance that has both now high monthly premiums and high deductibles, such that it is really not a good product for anybody. The only defense of this that's being proffered is that liberals are saying, oh, well, you know, a lot of the people on Obamacare don't have to pay that much because they're getting subsidized. Well, you know, as we know, you know, we don't get the subsidies to pay for this on subsidy trees. It is really just proving to be a spectacular failure. And not only that, Obama promised specifically that the law would cause everybody's insurance premiums to go down. And if the people, you know, within the, you know, self-contained ecosystem that's controlled by the government are seeing their premiums rise precipitously, that does not bode well for the rest of us who have also seen our premiums rise precipitously. The bottom line here is that Obamacare is at the top of the list in terms of headaches that Obama's going to be handing off to the next president. Clearly, there's going to be a bunch of foreign policy disasters that somebody's going to have to unpack, and there's no way that Obamacare is sustainable on its current path. The best that Democrats can do right now is sputter that, well, the law would be, you know, better if Republicans would concede they were wrong and do what we tell them to, you know, to fix it, and that's just not a sustainable position if Republicans retain control of the House of Representatives, as, you know, we expect they would. And I don't see them at any point here after, you know, Democrats rejecting any of their suggestions when they were writing the law to, you know, say that they're going to have some sort of, you know, meaningful say in fixing the law. So the temptation there will be to just stand by and let it crumble and try and do something altogether different. I mean, even Bill Clinton down in the campaign trail has been saying Obamacare is the craziest thing in the world. That's going to be sort of priority number one for Hillary Clinton is going to have to find some way to get them the 12 million or so people that have gotten insurance through this, you know, dog's breakfast to maintain their coverage in a way that, you know, that looks sustainable.
What exactly has she said she was going to do with Obamacare, Mark?
Well, the one thing that she's been talking about is that she wants to create the public option, which was an idea that was bandied about when they were first passing Obamacare, but was rejected as being sort of too radical. So I have a hard time imagining it will suddenly seem sane now. And the public option is literally this. It is this idea that we should create a federal government insurance company to compete with private insurers, and that will somehow drive down the cost of the overall insurance market because the government will somehow be able to provide insurance cheaper than private insurers. The idea that insurance companies who have 70 years of experience post-World War II offering employer-subsidized insurance and administrating those insurance policies can't make insurance cheap under Obamacare, but somehow a federal bureaucracy that we're creating from the ground up run by federal bureaucrats will somehow be able to show that these people that actually have the experience and know-how doing it, as insane as it sounds. So the idea that she's going to push this, especially if Republicans retain control of the House of Representatives, it's just kind of a non-starter. I don't know what her plan is going to do to fix it, but the fact of the matter is Democrats own this law. I mean, they didn't get a single Republican vote when they were passing it. Again, it is breaking in exactly the same ways the critics of the law said it would break. And so I don't see any political incentives for Republicans to, you know, stand up and help them fix the law as it is. They've got to think outside the box and come up with a new plan, because Republicans are not going to line up to defend Obamacare.
In the unlikely event that Donald Trump were elected, what has he promised to do, Molly? What can we discern from his views on health care and Obamacare?
I don't know, and Mark might have a better answer there, too. It's one of the interesting things about the this campaign is that neither candidate has focused too much on policy. Hillary Clinton does talk about some of her ideas because she's running a very dry, traditional, disciplined campaign, whereas Donald Trump has been a little bit all over the map in terms of what he says he supports or opposes as part of Obamacare. He went from being a total fan of single payer to now saying that at his Gettysburg speech last Friday, he unveiled his plan for the first 100 days in office. And one of the things that was on that list, which actually had a bunch of very interesting things, was a plan to repeal and replace Obamacare, but it was not detailed at all. So it's other than what we heard in the debates about his criticisms of Obamacare, which are well-founded, I'm not entirely sure what his plan going forward is.
Molly, will this news impact the presidential race in any way?
You know, it's interesting because it seems to me that the media have decided that the election is truly over, that there is no chance for Donald Trump, that there is no path to victory, that nothing he does or says or nothing that anybody says or does will affect the race. And in fact, if you look at what the big news was yesterday, it was that Obamacare premiums are going up an average of 25%. It was that President Obama is embroiled in the Hillary Clinton email server scandal in a way that directly affected her ability or whether or not she would be held accountable for it. And yet also Hillary Clinton is up in most of the states that matter, and even if it tightens, and I do think we're seeing some indication that things are tightening a little bit, it's not going to tighten enough to make a tremendous difference. Had Donald Trump actually stayed disciplined and focused less on personal attacks and more on substantive policy disagreements, I actually think he would have done far, far better. Whether or not you agree with him, you know, and if you're a conservative, you probably have plenty to disagree with him about. He had a pretty compelling message for a lot of people about how Washington, D.C. is corrupt, how most of the legislation that is passed is all cronyism, how we have an immigration policy that doesn't fit the needs of the country, how we don't fight wars in order to try and win them, how our economic agreements benefit the wealthy at the expense of the middle class or the lower class. And he presented this opportunity to really express frustration with the way that both governing parties had operated for a long time. In recent weeks, he's just been suffering the effects of not actually ever building a campaign. He doesn't have functioning offices in most states where he needs them. He hasn't raised money like he needed to or cooperated with other elected officials or candidates like Hillary Clinton has. And so, you know, he still thinks he's going to win, or he says he's going to win. We'll see how things go in November. I think he's made it, at the very least, much harder on himself than he needed to.
Mark, can we trust the polls? That's a big question everyone asks.
Well, that is a good question. There's a lot of evidence to show that polls in recent years have been unreliable. I mean, the polls in 2014 for, you know, key Republican Senate races were off by 10 points or more. Nate Silver, who's sort of the big polling guru, has sort of been warning for some time now that a lot of pollsters' methodologies have been questionable, and more than that, that there's a big problem with the issue of sort of the electorate sort of being, you know, self-aware about the perception of the polls affecting, you know, how they respond to pollsters and all manner of, like, really complicated problems. However, the precedent in presidential years is that there's usually a lot more polling, and there are a lot more variables that you can pull in to get an overall picture of where the country is at. And, you know, the more data you can put in the system, the more that you can cancel out the flaws of individual polls and other things like that. So while it's certainly possible that the polls are off, we saw this in 2012 where we saw all kinds of conservatives, you know, making these complex arguments that the polls needed to be unskewed. And it turned out they were pretty much right on. In fact, Nate Silver predicted 50 out of 50 states correctly, in that election. So, if the polls overall show that Hillary is winning, I would not expect there to be a big surprise in that regard. But having said that, polls in recent days have been tightening a bit nationally and in some swing states. So, you know, never say never. You know, a big event could happen, or, you know, things could change between here and Election Day.
Molly, what are your thoughts on the reliability of the polls?
I generally think it's good to believe polls, not believe them without question or uncritically, but in general, when you see multiple polls showing similar things, there's something you can believe in about those things. It's never a good idea to just take one poll at the exclusion of others. And sometimes when you're looking at state-based polling, there really is only one poll. So it's okay to take things with a grain of salt. But a lot of what's happening is just people refusing to accept that other people don't share their views or refusing to acknowledge their candidates' weaknesses. And that's not healthy for people. It's not good to not prepare for it. You know, we saw it with the Romney race. People really, truly believe that that was that the polling was not showing actual support. And when I talk to Trump fans, they definitely think that polling does not show support. Now, I will defend that there's something reasonable about this, which is, for one thing, they know why they like Trump, and they know why their friends and neighbors like Trump, and they don't see those views represented in mainstream media coverage of the candidate. So if you can't trust the media to accurately convey why you like a candidate or why everyone you know likes a candidate, you're also probably not going to believe the poll that's tied to that same media outlet's name for what the shape of the race is. Another thing is that the media have explicitly stated that they believe it is their job to keep Donald Trump from being elected president. You had major newspapers, no less than the New York Times, put this on the front page of the paper on August 18th. If you truly believe that it is your job to stop the democratic process from electing Donald Trump, what's limiting you? We know that it doesn't limit the news coverage in terms of how biased it can be. Does it also affect your ability to run a poll fairly? So I think that some of what's happening in terms of questioning polls goes back to the media's own problem with not being able to just tell a story in a way that makes people confident. But in general, and the Real Clear Politics average is very helpful for this, if you see a bunch of polls all saying the same thing, you should accept that and come to terms with that. And if you don't like it, then you should work to change people's minds at your state level.
Briefly, for both of you, there have been, especially this presidential cycle, at least allegations of widespread voter fraud. Is there any evidence? Mark, you first with about 30 seconds or so.
There's tons of evidence of widespread voter fraud. The question is whether or not there's enough evidence that the voter fraud could swing the election one way or the other. The big issue we have here is that for the last several years, the media have literally been saying voter fraud is a myth because Republicans have tried to introduce laws that would require ID at the ballot to prevent illegal immigrants and other things like that to vote. We do know there have been certain cases. Recall, I think it was the 2008 senatorial election in Minnesota where Al Franken got narrowly elected by a few hundred votes. And we've seen analysis since then to show that enough felons voted in that election that it's almost certainly true that Franken should not have won that election. So we do know that voter fraud exists, and we do know that it's consequential. And further, just the laws in certain states. Oregon does every single election by mail now. And I'm from Oregon, and the stories I've heard anecdotally of voter fraud are just, you know, legion. You know, people get ballots in their mailbox from people that don't no longer live at that address all the time. But it's not in the media's interest to dig into this, and it's certainly not in the Democratic Party's interest to make an issue out of voter fraud. Most of the places you see voter fraud being an issue tend to be urban areas controlled by Democratic machines, and what happens is that, you know, the local governing authorities who are Democrats have no incentive to dig into voter fraud and make sure that the laws are being enforced and that there's no fraud there because Democrats benefit from it. But I don't think, even though it's a pervasive problem and it's one that needs to be looked at a lot closer, when it comes to a presidential election and the amount of votes being cast in that, even at the state level, I don't imagine that there's so much fraud that it's likely to swing an election. And in particular, this election is set up to be not even close enough such that 2,000 votes in one or two states could swing the election.
Molly, your thoughts on the same subject?
Yeah, I think the media would like to have it both ways. They claim that anytime you want to have a rule that people show ID before you vote, that's just a form of election fraud. But then when you have these credible allegations of sort of widespread voter fraud, they act like it's not happening. Throughout history, we've had credible allegations of voter fraud. I can't remember if it was LBJ or Kennedy who, in that race, that said of what was happening in West Virginia, you know, tone it down. I'm paying for a win, not a landslide, you know. And there was the Kennedy victory that hinged on voter fraud in Chicago. More recently, Al Franken won his race in part due to voting irregularities. So it can swing elections, and we should be on top of it one of the things that makes it hard to be on top of it is that the media denounce any questions of voter fraud as the rantings of a crazy person, which again makes you think you can't trust the media when they say even if there is voter fraud, it won't swing a full election. So the best thing to do, though, is just be involved at your local level. We all vote locally, and this is another good argument for voting on a certain day. And voting in person is that you get to meet people in your community. You know better about what the voting rolls say, how many Democrats, Republicans, and others there are in your neighborhood. We have systems that enable us to keep tabs on what's happening, and we should avail ourselves of those.
Folks, we are less than 2 weeks away from Election Day. Stay informed by reading Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thanks.
Thanks again.
If you appreciate our weekly interviews with the Hemingways on the November elections, I know many of you do, please consider joining our monthly or annual giving program, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. If you join by Reformation Day, that's October 31st, and it's coming up soon, we'll send you a limited edition long sleeve Here I Stand t-shirt in addition to the other membership benefits. You can find out how to become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron by clicking the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, and join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. On the other side of the break on this Wednesday afternoon, the subject with Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate is Men and Church. Then, it's Issues Etc. Reformation Week in Hour 2. We stay in Luther's inner circle with Luther's pastor, Johannes Bugenhagen. Dr. Kurt Hendel of the Lutheran School of Theology will be our guest.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
This is Pastor Donald Jordan welcoming you to Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chico, California. We stand upon the inspired, inerrant Word of God and preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Students at Chico State and Butte College are welcome to our college group. Our divine service is at 10 and Sunday school at 9. We are located at 750 Moss Avenue, and our website is RedeemerChico.org.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at EdGruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in October, and we'll send you a limited edition Here I Stand t-shirt. Find out more about our monthly or annual giving program at issuesetc.org. Just click the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses, or call Craig 618-223-8385. Join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by Reformation Day, and we'll send you a limited edition long sleeve shirt along with your other membership benefits. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.